Hello, and welcome to Season 4, Episode 8 of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. I'm Becca, and this is a podcast that features members of the Virtual Coffee community. Virtual Coffee is an intimate group of developers at all stages of their coding journey, and they're here on this podcast sharing their stories and what they've learned. And we're here to share it with you. Here with me today is my co-host, Dan.
Thanks, Becca. Today is the penultimate episode of Season 4, and we're ending on a really good one. We sat down with Dr. Mei-Ling Murphy, a software engineer who recently transitioned into tech after an 8+ year journey as a PhD research scientist in materials science and engineering, and also creating her own digital content creation business. Mei-Ling shared with us her approach to finding employers with the right culture for you, some ideas on how contributing to open source projects can help prepare you for your first job, and the value of developing the connection to community and being able to grow alongside others. We also talked at length about her habit of taking notes as she works, and she was patient enough to answer all of our questions about finding the right approach.
We start every episode of the podcast like we start every virtual coffee. We introduce ourselves with our name, where we're from, what we do, and a random check-in question. We hope you enjoy this episode. Our random question today is, if you could have someone follow you around all the time, like a personal assistant, what would you have them do?
Oh, man.
Think about that. My name's Becca. I'm a front-end developer from a small town in Ohio. And I there are like little things that I don't like to do that I would like them to do or like to remember for me. Like, oh, tomorrow your kid has silly hat day. Like, I never remember that it's silly hat day until the morning. So they'll make sure that the silly hat is put out and that I've turned off the stove and that I have bought all my Christmas presents, that kind of stuff. And calling insurance companies. Yeah, they would definitely make all of the insurance company phone calls. That is the worst.
Yeah, that's a good one. Hi, I'm Dan. I'm a developer from Cleveland, Ohio. And I don't know. One answer is, what would I not have them do? But then I was thinking about it a little bit. And the first thing that really popped to my mind would be, you know, to remind me of what I went into a room to do, or remind me of, you know, like I go down to the basement to get something from the pantry. But just like I'm on autopilot and I go and open the refrigerator that's down there. And then I'm just staring at the refrigerator, wondering what I'm what I'm doing. What
I've done that before. And I was like looking for my keys. And I was like, wait a minute. Yeah. Our keys are.
So just like somebody that could be like, hey, no, you know, you're supposed to get the cereal from down here.
And whispering just like that.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, yeah, I know. If they could do it in a way that wouldn't let anybody else know that I, I forgot.
Could
that
they would just be text you?
That would be, added. So that's what I'm going with.
That's hilarious. My name is Mei-Ling. I am a software engineer based out of Atlanta, Georgia. And I would have to say the first thing that came to my mind was meal planning. Everything surrounding meal planning, I would just pass off on to them because I feel like so much of my time is dedicated towards answering the question, what are we going to eat today for breakfast, lunch, and dinner? And so all of that passed to them. If they want to order things, you know, actually do the meal prep too, that's fine by me.
I love that. I had really busy October. And so like, I don't have the brain power for this. So we started getting Hungry Root. We are not sponsored by Hungry Root, but I am open to a Hungry Root sponsorship. So if anybody knows how to do that, they can send me food as payment. But it's really nice because it's like healthy food and a lot of different varieties for all of the meals. And it was good. It didn't like taste terrible. It was super easy. Threw most of it in the air fryer and called a day. Nice. And that felt like a game changer.
Yeah, that sounds incredibly useful.
Yeah. So welcome, Mei-Ling. We are very, very happy to have you here with us on this fourth season of Virtual Coffee Podcast. And we always get started with your origin story. And I know yours is, I think it's super interesting. So I'm really excited to hear you tell more about how you got to this point in your career.
Sure. So I will try to make this as linear as possible. Where should I start? So my background is in materials science and engineering. It's what I did for undergrad, what I did my PhD in. But during my graduate school experience, that's kind of where I started delving into the world of tech. So while I was in grad school, I kind of started experimenting with websites and blogging. I don't know if you remember the platform Blogger, but I started blogging there and then switched over to WordPress and ended up building this like lifestyle brand that turned into a company that I ran for about 8 years. And in the course of running that business, I started doing work with other businesses and helping them with their social media presence and also doing a few website development projects on the side. And the deeper I got into that work, I realized I enjoyed the development side more than I did the marketing and the social media aspect necessarily. And so I started having like these great ideas for different client websites. And I quickly realized that my vision of what I wanted to achieve did not match my level of programming skills, because at the time, you know, I'd been tinkering with HTML, CSS, but I started, you know, wanting to build full-fledged backend stuff. And it's like, you know what, let me, you know, I've been playing around with this for a while. You know, I'd done some classes in high school, HTML, CSS. I was like, you know, I really want to explore the path of actual programming and just see where it leads me. Like I when I started, I would say, my more focused journey into tech started the end of 2019. And I started reaching out to the tech community on Twitter and found a lot of resources just to explore the path towards becoming a software engineer. And yeah, since 2019, I just went on this self-directed journey. Definitely, I wouldn't say self-taught, because there's just been so many people and communities and resources that have been so integral to my journey. I did not do it alone. And that's how I am here. And I guess that's kind of like my short version.
All right. I need to dive into this a little bit more, because you have a PhD in materials science and engineering. And yes, you've gone to all of these different very exciting places. So how do you go to school for that long and kind of decide to do your own thing? That's a hard decision for a lot of people to make.
You know, I understand that. I think part of it is just my personality. I like to try a lot of different things. I have a lot of different interests. And so there's never really a time I'm just focused in on like one avenue. And so, you know, while I was in grad school, I was doing all of, you know, the digital marketing, social media stuff. What really helped me, I guess, crystallize my decision to make a full transition into tech was the fact that I wanted to design my lifestyle in a way that allowed me more flexibility, especially since, you know, I'd just given birth to my son. Like, I was pregnant with him, let's see, right, when I was doing my dissertation, and like, I graduated, defended, and gave birth. Once I graduated and, you know, had my son, I really started exploring more flexible career opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I just evaluated my interest and said, you know, let me at least give this programming a shot. You know, it's something that I'm interested in. Let's see if I can make a career out of this, because I really felt from what I was reading, and this was, you know, before the pandemic, so remote jobs weren't as big as they are now, but I still felt like I could potentially have more flexibility in being able to work from home, maybe down the road, and just pursue something I was passionate about. I love the problem solving that programming affords me. I mean, a lot of the skills that I developed as an engineer in the material science world directly translate to programming as well as a software engineer. So yeah, that's kind of how I transitioned.
That's awesome. And I think, you know, there are so many moms out there that I hear talk about like wanting flexibility, but in wanting to be engaged intellectually in what they're doing. And that's the same thing that I really love about coding too, is that I can do that. You know, I can have the time to work part-time and do the mom things that I want to be able to do. But also, I feel like even if my house is destroyed at the end of the day, usually I have accomplished something with my code. Now, that doesn't happen all the time, but it's nice to feel engaged in that way. And so I definitely understand that.
Cool.
So when you, pretty early on in virtual coffee, I think it was early on for you. It was early on from when I remember you. You had built this homeschool app that was gorgeous. And we were doing a demo days monthly challenge. And you were up for it. You're like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And I was like, this is awesome. And you presented it. And I mean, it is very, very beautiful. I'll have the link to it in the show notes. But can you talk to us about, you know, how you went about developing that and like getting the courage to present it to all of these people?
Oh, man. Okay. So to start that story, it goes back to me starting to take the CS50 Harvard Introduction to Computer Science course. And a part of that course at the end, you have to build, you know, this kind of capstone project, integrating all of the skills that you've learned. And for my project, it was, you know, based in like Flask, using Python, hadn't really delved into the world of JavaScript too much. And initially, you know, the requirements for the project were not very, the scope was not very large. But the idea that I had, I quickly realized was way beyond what the course had taught me. And so, you know, I tried to think of a project, first of all, that was something that I knew I was going to be interested in. And for me, being able to keep track of my homeschooling activities for my child was something I knew that was going to motivate me to continue working on the project. I didn't want to start it and abandon it. I really wanted to see it through. And so as I started working on the project and started exhausting what I had, you know, been able to apply for my CS50 course, I turned to Twitter. And long story short, I got involved in the 100 Days of Code challenge. And in the midst of that, I was always finding resources that would help me with different parts of the project. And as I would successfully implement certain features, the ideas just kept pouring in. I was like, oh, maybe I can add this now. Maybe I can add this. And I started talking with people who I think could potentially use the site and got their feedback as well. And so by the time I came to Virtual Coffee, I'd already been in the state of, you know, being comfortable sharing my work, because I quickly realized that the more I shared, the more I could learn from the community. And it just really helped to just cement my understanding, being able to talk about what I was working on, even when I would run into issues, learning how to phrase those questions to be able to get meaningful assistance. Like, all of that was so helpful. And so I was really excited about that challenge that Virtual Coffee hosted, because it was a more formal way for me to do what I had been doing on Twitter. And so I'm really grateful, you know, for a community like Virtual Coffee and the challenges that the community offers, because they're just so beneficial for your development as a developer.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, I was just kind of cruising around on the Homeschool Journal app, and it's really cool. And you know, when I was kind of looking around, I saw the learning log, and I assume that's part of the 100 Days of Code, you know, thing, which I've,
yes.
I know a lot of people that have, you know, been very excited about that. I haven't done it, but I was, you know, I found it very interesting seeing the sort of daily progress, and you logged it, and we can put a link to this in the show notes too, right? But you have this as a one document, right? All of these,
yes.
All of your days, sort of days progress, and then days, you know, I know you have parts where you have like some thoughts or like, you know, links to stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very cool. It's really cool to see that all kind of put together in one place. Lots of times I think people, I don't know what the formal rules or whatever of 100 Days of Code are, but I see them on Twitter and stuff like that a lot, you know, and it's always cool to see people's like work, but seeing it all in one place, you know, one project, right? Is very cool. I was kind of wondering if you wanted to talk a little bit more about like that specific to this app, you know, or to this project, you know, how that helped you, how you, the things you got, you know, value out of it. Was it like a chore? Was it, you know what I mean? Like, I just like talk a little bit about that experience.
No,
I think it's really cool.
I'm really glad you brought that up because my motivation, so the name of the repo is called My Learning Path. And early on in my journey, I was looking at a lot of inspirational blog posts of people who successfully transitioned into tech. And I came across this one blog post. I wish I could remember his name, but he linked to this template. I borrowed that template from him. And it was just so fascinating to see his journey from not knowing a line of JavaScript to, you know, a year and a half later, having this, you know, professional role in programming. And I knew from that moment that I wanted to record every moment of my path so I could always look back and see how I progressed, one. And then two, to serve as just a resource I could share with other people so they could see what resources that I encountered along my way and could potentially be helpful for them and be encouraging in their own journeys. And so for me, having that that repo where I would, you know, update daily for the most part was very encouraging. It was one of my motivating forces. And that kept me excited during this, you know, self-directed path because I could always look back and, you know, see what I'd accomplished or things that I had questions about. And it would be a great way for me to be able to reach out and just not lose track of, you know, what I was learning and what I needed assistance with. And so for the project itself, it was just a natural progression to include all of the updates for that as well, and definitely helped when it came time to troubleshoot different aspects. And then also helped me just remember the amount of work I put into certain features. So when it was time to talk about my project to employers, it was very easy for me to remember the work that I'd put into it.
Yeah, I think that's great. I love this idea, and it's one of those things that always seems very valuable to me, and I have trouble getting myself to do, you know, things like this. And you know, you mentioned the template, and the template is literally just the date. And so it's today's progress, thoughts, link to work, and resources, and that's it, mm-hmm. right? So each day is just, it's just that. So simple, very simple format, and a very, you know, turns out to be a very, I think, valuable tool. So do you like, I know that I'm sure it's not the same every day, obviously, but like, did you work into like, was this part of your routine of sort of ending the day or, you know, like, when do you write these summaries?
That's the kind of thing I was like, question.
Pick people's brains that successfully do these things because I, you know, I'm always trying to like figure out how to do it. You know what I mean?
Sure. And I feel like I
run out the door every day. So.
Yeah. For me, what worked best was to do it, just as I was doing the work. So for instance, like if I was troubleshooting a specific feature, or if I was learning something new in a language, I would just copy those links and just drop them in the document. And then if I had thoughts about it later, once I'd had time to digest, I would throw those thoughts in there, or thoughts in the moment, even if I was unclear about something. So for me, it wasn't a really defined structure. It was just as I worked, if something stood out to me that I should throw it in there, I would just pop it in there. And so what really helped was having my VS Code for that repo open at all times on my desktop and just made for easy transfer of resources and thoughts.
And that's a great, that's such a great habit. I feel like to do, you know, I could see how that could be so useful. You know, this is like, this makes me think back to our random question. I could also, you know, it's the same thing of, you know, walking down to the basement and forgetting about a thing, you know, thinking about something else. And I do that same thing myself, even when I'm writing code, right? I have a question. I'm like, oh, that'd be cool. Or I wonder how this works. And I'm like, well, let's fix this other thing, you know, then forget about it. So, you know, so you can get yourself to take those notes as you work. I think that's very cool.
Yeah, it's really helpful for me now, even in my role. I don't do a repo for it, but I have, you know, a Notion doc that has different notebooks. So as I run into issues and I resolve them, I quickly update that, like, as I'm working, because inevitably, sometimes you run into the same issue and you're like, wait, how did I figure this out again? Yeah. And so it serves like as a great resource for, you know, troubleshooting and just, you know, learning the different parts of the code base and things like that. So. That's just me. I have to take notes. That's just how my brain operates.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really love that. So I am trying to like Notion and I continually don't. So is there a template that you've used that works for you? I think it's just overwhelming. There's so much to do.
Oh, I totally get it. I will have to share the link with you because I did find this template that basically set up different notebooks on one page. And so I'll have a notebook for, you know, different repos in the code base or for different technologies. And so it's very, very easy to stay organized for me that way. And so, yeah, I'll have to share that link with you because it's been great. Because, yeah, when I first started using Notion and just saw that blank page, just like, well, where do I start here? How do I, you know, make this effective? So totally.
And there's so much you can do with it. And if you're sharing it with other people, then it's just a whole other can of worms that you have to like, they're all using it in their own ways. And
I get it. I will say though, like when I did start using Notion during the job search as well, and there's a great template that someone from VC shared.
Yeah,
for the job
Karen,
search.
I think.
Yes, it's so great. But in addition to that, using tables in Notion, I don't know if you've ever tried it, but for me, because I was on Twitter all the time, and you know, you'll see all these tweets with like all of the amazing resources that you should check out all the time. And I was quickly becoming overwhelmed with the amount of bookmarks that I had on Twitter. And so tables in Notion, you can tag them. You can create your own database in Notion. And so I would like save my different links and then tag them with like, oh, this is for JavaScript or this is for AWS or, you know, this is for doing databases. And so when I'd go back and wanted to study a certain topic, I could just search my tags and quickly see all of the links for that resource instead of trying to comb through Twitter bookmarks.
Yeah, that's useful. I keep thinking about how to do something like that for virtual coffee because we have so many people contributing to coffee chats every week. We get so many great resources. Like I want to have a repository where we can just send people like these are things that our members have recommended. But I really do like the idea of having tags there. I think that makes it much easier and more organized to use than other things I've explored.
Yeah, for sure. I use an app called Pinboard. That's the very old school bookmarking app that has somehow survived. But it's just bookmarks and tags. I think I can add notes to things, but I don't usually. But I have found that when I can remember to get them in there, you know, it's like the habit for me is the hard part. And it,
your
it's,
Pinboard
I feel like
is on your site, right?
Is it?
I think it is because I believe that I have gone there a couple of times. I'm like, I know Dan talked about this resource. So I'm going to go check his Pinboard. So I have secretly been using Dan's Pinboard.
That's cool. Yeah. No, every once in a while I share links to it, but like I forget about it sometimes. And then, but it's, I'm always so thankful when I have remembered and then go back, you know what I mean? And you know, grab a link from whatever random, you know, CSS or Node or whatever thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like that, the Twitter bookmarks is hard to, it works better for me as an inbox of things to process, you know, and then stick somewhere else. I think if you're going to try to use it for resources, you know. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of creating your own like database. So like that, that's cool.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah,
like
I interrupted you.
Sorry.
There's one thing in Notion that I do like, and I'll include a link in the show notes, but it's the front end developer learning guide. And it's one page and it has a checklist, and I really like checklists, and it has resources with tags. Now that you say that, it reminded me like different sections. And so
nice.
It's different than the roadmap, but I like it because it just really breaks down different things to learn and provides resources for that. So I have not vetted this and I'm not sure how old it is, but I really do appreciate how it's organized and how there's a journey through that thing that I can understand.
Nice.
So the other thing too, I think we frequently get the question or people wanting to talk in virtual coffee about note-taking and how people keep up with this stuff. So I just love this part of the conversation, but have you been able to take that into your job that you're doing now? Are you still taking notes or do you still find that useful?
Oh, absolutely. So I've gotten a lot of great advice from those VC chats about note taking. And I take notes in Notion. primarily, and then also just in a regular notebook, because I feel like in meetings, it's quicker for me to just jot down things and then be able to flesh it out in Notion later. Mm-hmm. But like on the spot, definitely my paper note taking. And then for, you know, like I mentioned, like taking notes when I'm working on a ticket, I have like notebooks for different tickets, just so I can keep track of, you know, the issues that I'm working through and new techniques that I'm learning, and just, you know, understanding parts of the code base and the foundational knowledge that I'm ramping up on, because there's just, you know, always so much to pick up on. So yeah, I'm definitely still note taking for sure.
Yeah. So as part of that process, is that something that you take in to like maybe one-on-ones with you, or, you know, what if somebody was asking, is it important that I invest in starting to do note taking as part of my developer journey? I think you would say yes, but could you talk, like, what would you tell them?
I would say to give it a try and try not to overcomplicate it. If it's just starting small, you know, jotting down ideas or questions, but I will say that the benefits are worth the time invested. I know for me personally, like in my one-on-one meetings with my manager, like I have a template for those meetings as well. So those are another place where we're kind of taking notes for like questions I have for him or next steps. And then he actually initiated something for the team where we have our weekly highlights and lowlights. And so that's another form of kind of like note taking. So during the week, as I, you know, come across things that I feel like are worthy of that document, I'll just include that as well. And so, yeah, I for me, it just really helps. There's just so much information to process all the time. And for me, it helps if I can dump that out of my head to somewhere else that is easily searchable. And easily referenced and easily shareable as well.
Yeah, I love that. I think really breaking down those, what you're working on too, helps to solidify those ideas in your head. Or I know like sometimes I'll be writing something that doesn't click because I want to ask a question about it. And then suddenly like, oh, wait a minute. Yep. Yeah, I know what I should be doing here, or I know what I missed. And so having that as, I don't do a good job of note taking while I am working, but it's something that I am working towards. So maybe if you share that Notion doc, I will do a better job of it.
Do you end up, you know, in work or in other places, you know, you talk about sharing stuff. I was just curious about, do you share like through Notion, you know, directly, you know, do you use like tools like, sharing views through Notion, or are you just kind of use Notion as your own like collection, and then, you know, create some other document to share? You know,
yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah, so in Notion, what's great, you know, you can have. I feel like this is turning into a Notion.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I'm like, this is going to be the Notion episode.
But I love note taking. you know, and it probably makes sense because, you know, in my graduate school experience, working in the lab, we had to keep a research lab notebook. So I had to document everything every day for all of the experiments, because when it was time to write our papers, you had to be able to reference those details. So now I'm kind of making that connection. That's probably why I'm a little bit obsessed with note-taking. But yeah, back to Notion. You can have, you know, private notes and public notes all in the same profile. So it's easy to, you know, make a public note and just pull certain things that you'd want to share from your private notes and put it there, so you don't have to share your entire private, you know, notebook, for instance. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Cool. I was just like, you know, so for example, you had a section for your one-on-ones, you know, with your manager or whatever. And I was just like, oh, what does the man, you know, is that like you guys you know, collaborating in Notion,
right?
Or is it more just, you know, you're collecting your own stuff and then basically reading from it to, you know, when you talk with them.
Right. Yeah. I definitely have a mix of private and public.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, yep. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Another nice thing about Notion. I keep, when I do notes, I keep them just in notebook on my Mac, and it's very, you know, very simple and it works, you know, but it's not, doesn't have like all the nice, you know, those nice tools like that. So that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, and note taking is so personal too. So everybody will find something. It's like one of those almost controversial topics, I feel like, because people like love their note taking software so much that there will be like arguments over, you know, whether or not that is the right one to use. There's not the right one. There's whatever works for you. And it's great that you found this process through everything that you've done, and you're still able to carry that with you and see that work as a software developer, software engineer. So you've done all of this stuff and you seem very organized to me, and you also have a kid at home. And so what was that transition like, going from learning as a mom to working as a mom? It sounds like you've kind of been doing that your whole career, but it can be a big change when you're diving into a new profession.
Absolutely. So, you know, when I was learning, I just had to schedule around my child. And so there were many, you know, days where I would be programming mostly at night or early in the morning before he was up. But, you know, now that I'm working in my professional role, like, I just have to like give a huge shout out to my husband, because I could not do this without him. You know, especially because it's a little bit more of a formal structure. It's not like, you know, be at your desk 9 to 5. There's flexible working hours, but you know, to be really in the zone, you need, at least I need, long stretches of time, like uninterrupted time, to really like get in there and resolve issues. And so for me, it's great that I, you know, I'm able to work from home and still be able to spend time with my child. But like, my husband is also there, like, you know, being active with him as well. And so I don't feel guilty for working, because I know he's taken care of as well. Because for me, and we talked about this like in a VC meeting in the past, but when I was looking in, like when I actually started looking into software engineering as a career, I was very hesitant to start searching for jobs, because I just wasn't sure if it was going to fit my lifestyle. You know, after working for 8 years, running my own business and setting my own schedule, it was hard for me to wrap my mind around making that transition, because I just enjoyed the freedom that I had. And it wasn't until I spoke with a friend who is also a software engineer and also a mom, told me, was like, no, you know, there are remote work opportunities that have flexible working hours and accommodate parents. And I'm just like, what? I did not know this was possible, you know, and the opportunities increased in the remote space, you know, following the pandemic. And I just was not aware of all of the different company cultures. I just had in my mind a stereotypical, you know, you work at a startup or whatever, like you're going to be working early mornings, late nights, every day, all week. And when I finally actually started the job search process, I quickly realized that companies have different cultures and it's possible to find one that fits your lifestyle. And so, yeah, it's been a great transition. I feel like I've had a lot of support from the family side, and also on my job side. Like, I have a really supportive team, really supportive manager. And it's just made this transition a really exciting one.
That's very cool. When you started, you know, learning about these different cultures and things like that, how did you find the jobs that like had the sort of the flexibility or the cultures that you were looking for? I mean, what did they show up in searches, or was it more once you began dialogue, then it became clear, you know?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I have to shout out this site that I found during my job search called keyvalues.io. Mm-hmm. But they have a section on their site called Culture Queries. And you can basically go through this like tag cloud and select the qualities that are most important to you. So if you value pair programming, if you value flexible work hours, and so on. And so I kind of use that as a springboard to start seeing what companies were out there that shared the same values that I had specified. And so that's how I found some of these companies. And then just being active on Twitter, I'd always see, you know, tweets about different companies and their culture. And so I just kept a running list of companies, again, in a Notion doc, a running list of companies that I wanted to investigate. And I had no problem reaching out to employees on LinkedIn of those companies to like get a more accurate, in quotes, pulse of like what the culture is actually like. And that's kind of how I tried to gauge, you know, from the outside looking in, what a company was actually about.
Well, that's very cool. And that sounds like a great tool. But now I want to know, more about your experience of reaching out to people, you know, current employees, as a prospective employee. You know, did you find people generally receptive to that sort of thing? It's kind of like a cold call situation, right? I mean,
Yes, it was exactly a cold call situation. And surprisingly, I wasn't nervous about it because just my whole attitude in approaching, you know, software engineering as a potential career, I was just kind of, you know, I'm just going to see where this goes. If it doesn't end up there, like, I'm just going to enjoy the process. I enjoy the coding. And so that's how I approached like every step of the process and like securing a role. And so when I was reaching out to people, you know, I was friendly. It was like, you know, hey, I'm interested in learning more about your company. If you have 15 minutes to spare, would you mind hopping on a quick chat call with me to just discuss, you know, what you enjoy about working at such and such? And there were so many people who responded back and gave like really great advice and feedback for my job search and even referrals and just like not even asking for them. And so I was pleasantly surprised to see how generous the people were when I reached out to them. And I feel like it extended to what I'd seen within the tech community on Twitter as well. I found people to be very generous and supportive. And so to see that, you know, off of Twitter and in other spaces like LinkedIn and, you know, all of the developer communities as well, it's just very encouraging to see the amount of support offered to someone who's just trying to transition into this space.
That's very cool. It's cool that it was a pretty positive experience too. You know, I suppose you never know when you reach out to somebody that you don't know. And that's great to have a generally positive experience. Makes me wonder if you ever had anybody that was just like, run away. You don't have to.
I have had those DMs before. Somebody on Twitter saw I was going to, that I wasn't applying for a company, but somebody else I knew was. And so I had posted about it and I had a DM and they said, this is the most toxic place I have ever worked. And I'm afraid to say anything out loud because I think that the retaliation would be so bad that I might never have a career in tech again. I was like, that is horrifying. And it's hard because you just don't know what to do with that information. At least I didn't know what to do with that information other than to pass it along. But, you know, also one person's experience might not be everybody else's. So it's really trying to figure out, I think, how to ask the right questions too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's such a great point because, like you said, the experience could even differ from team to team within an organization. So someone just saying they had a negative experience working at XYZ, it may have been because of a specific team. It may have been because of a specific manager. Like, you never know. So ask all the questions is my advice, and connect with as many people, you know, working at the companies that you're interested in, just to help you get a better sense of what it would be like to work there. And of course, you never really know the full story until you're actually working there. But if you can clear as much information as possible to help you make your decision, go for it.
Absolutely. I always take down names of people and then I check them out on social media. I see like what they're tweeting about. I talked to somebody once and I was talking about, well, you know, I'll think about the opportunity and then I'll get back to you. I want to do some more research. And they're like, okay, well, I just posted a tweet. I just tweeted and I tagged everyone in my team. So if you're interested in knowing more about the team, then everybody is right there. I'm like, well, that makes it easy. But I think that can say, like, even looking at their interactions, I know this might sound weird and it might sound creepy, but I like to see how people interact with each other. And sometimes that's the only glimpse that you get of it is through social media, to be able to see that. So I don't know. It peels back the curtain a little bit. I think that's not, if you don't peel back a curtain, pulls back the curtain.
You're mixing metaphors again.
I am. I think I did it earlier in virtual coffee too. I was talking about peeling things. I'm on a peeling tip today.
Oh man.
That should have been our intro question. Would you eat your apple peeled or not peeled? No, that's not a good one.
Yeah, I don't.
I liked our initial
peeled potatoes or not peeled potatoes. Now I'm on a kick. I should stop going with this. Okay. Need to redirect my brain. I'm sorry. This is what happens to me at 3 o'clock every day. My brain just starts to lose it a little bit. So
I feel like we made it 40 minutes before a full on sidetrack, you know, so
that's pretty good.
That's like, pretty good for us.
Yeah. Okay. So now you are at this job now, and what have been the biggest, I guess maybe what's been most surprising about this job, or the things that you've been happily surprised by since starting?
Oh man, great question. So I would have to say the biggest thing that stood out to me when starting my job is just making that transition from working on personal projects to production level projects with massive code bases.
Yeah.
I remember when I first looked at the hundreds of repos, I was a little overwhelmed and wondered, like, how do you approach this? Like, during my journey, I never saw blog posts on how to learn a massive code base and start contributing to it within a month. So I would say that was definitely something that surprised me, because I had not seen that level of breadth in a code base before at the production level. And on the other hand, what I was pleasantly surprised with was just the amount of support across the organization, not just within my team. I'm really grateful at my job. They have a very great onboarding process. Mm-hmm. So when you come in, you're matched with a new hire buddy, and that's someone who is there for all of your initial questions for like the first several months that you're on the job. And so when I had feelings like, whoa, this is massive code base, where do I even begin? I already had someone I could just reach out to without feeling any shame or anything, and, you know, just connect on that level and then have them be able to connect me with other people within the organization to help. So that was really surprising to me, to just have that kind of that level of support just early on, just a very welcoming environment. And I'm grateful for that. That's really helped with me making this transition.
So other than having somebody that you can talk to help, do you have any tips about, you know, now that you've got your feet under you, about diving into large code bases, you know, for the first time?
Oh man. Yes. So I would say one thing I would recommend is contributing to open source projects and finding some that have large code bases and digging into those issues, because if you can find one issue to work on within a massive code base, that will give you an entry point into learning how the different pieces connect, especially if they're using, you know, other services, cloud services that, like for me, I was not familiar with a lot of the cloud services and how that integrates into the architecture. And so if you can find open source projects like that, you know, if you're learning right now, and start diving to those issues to just learn how all of the pieces connect, I feel like that will prepare you immensely for, you know, moving into a role where you have to do that on the production level.
That's great advice. I love that advice very much. not specifically open source. It's usually my advice when the next question comes up is find something small, you know, in the code base, whatever, you know, if it's the new code base you're working in or whatever, find something small and try to just, you know, start there and fix it. And you'll start just to make the connections. But I had never really connected that. I mean, the practice of contributing open source, finding big projects, especially to get used to this, right? Because it's, it is a, like almost everything, a thing that where practice makes, well, just helps you improve, right? And so, you know, having been a developer for a while, you know, I don't have like a lot of anxiety jumping into a new code base. And that's not to say I jump into it and know anything about it, right? But I have the, like, I just have the experience of having done it a lot of times. I just kind of can, I just trust that I will be able to do it because I've just done it, you know. And man, yeah, you using open source for that and to prepare yourself before you jump, like before you get to your first job where you know you're going to be, you know, dumped into a huge code base. Because anybody that's hiring, probably most people that are hiring already have something, you know what I mean? And it's probably already a giant, well, I was going to say a giant mess. I mean, that'll depend, you know, about how long the thing's been going on. But, you know, there's a lot of giant messes out there, and that doesn't mean they're bad, but they can be very overwhelming, you know. I love that. I love that advice about using open source to like practice just that specifically, you know.
And I would add to that, it can be challenging to get into open source and finding issues that when you're starting out, but asking people in your communities, like in virtual coffee, is there anybody here that's running an open source project? And if I take an issue, will you help me? Or say like, hey, I want to contribute to open source, but I'm afraid to. Would anybody be there to pair up with me if I get stuck? And that can, or even just to find the issues, that can reduce those barriers to entry because you have that support. You can talk to people who maybe have been in the code base or who are used to diving into large code bases and allow them to, you know, kind of mentor you through that, but to also have the chance to communicate with someone else because, you know, that's circling back to what you talked about in the beginning, like being able to talk about what you're doing is so hugely important. And so if you think I don't need help diving into this code base, you need practice talking about it if you haven't, because that's a skill that a lot of us don't get to develop when we're learning mostly on our own.
I just to add to that, there's a lot of awesome people in the developer community that either for work or for their own projects, you know, maintain open source projects like this. Nick Taylor comes to mind with Forum, which is a commercial product, but it's open source. And I've watched him do it a million times. He is always happy to like help people and jump into issues, you know, with the Forum code base. And I think any project, and that's another good example of a large scale, you know, code base, right? It's not a simple app at all. He's always like very generous with his time. And there's a lot of people like with projects like that are worth contributing to. You know, there's almost always people that maintainers or advocates or whoever, you know, that I think reaching out to and would be excited, you know, to help somebody learn, you know, help somebody contribute to the app. I think we're always kind of pushing open source here, Virtual Coffee. So
I love it.
Fits in with the theme.
Absolutely. Nick just came to my live stream that I did before this and is doing TensorFlow.js stuff, and I couldn't even get it running. And he's there debugging it. He's not done TensorFlow.js before, but, you know, he is there to be supportive and to help work through things that I don't even know where to start right now because that error it means nothing to me. So, you know, it's just nice to have people there and to build that community because it can be part of the community building aspect of things. So as you kind of look forward into your future, what do you think that you'll continue to value? Or are there lessons that you've learned over the last, you know, year or so that you're hoping to take with you or to grow with?
Awesome question. At the top of my mind, I feel like one of the things I want to continue developing is just that connection to community. It's just so integral to development, no matter what industry you're in. And it just makes life more meaningful as well. I value, you know, genuine personal connections and being able to grow alongside others who have, you know, similar goals and visions is priceless to me. So that's something I will always highly value and will always be striving to develop more. And as far as like looking into the future, I want to at some point be more active in sharing more of the knowledge that I'm learning to just help others, because that was so priceless to me on the other side when I was learning from others. And so I want to be able to give back in that way. I feel like I still need to like get this work-life balance situation together before I start pouring energy into that. But that's definitely on the horizon and something that I would be passionate about contributing towards.
Well, you got the notes, so.
The notes are there.
They are there. Well, thank you, Mei-Ling, so much for being here with us today. This was very, very awesome. And I know I have learned a lot. And so, yeah, thanks so much.
Well, my pleasure. Really enjoyed chatting with you all.
Yeah, thanks, Mei-Ling. All right. We will, I guess we'll talk to you. I don't know where the sentence is going. I'm sorry. I totally lost the whole thing. Man, I made it almost the whole way without totally imploding. Becca, you say bye. This is the part where
we're
just
not
like,
good at saying goodbye. Yeah, I'm, so it's we bad. Just like every, stare every at time. Each other awkwardly or something. Yeah. So thanks, Mei-Ling. Bye.
Bye. Oh man. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. This episode was produced by Dan Ott and Becca Harrott-Weigel and was edited by Andy Bonjour at Good Day Communications. If you have questions or comments, you can hit us up on Twitter at virtualcoffee.io or email us at podcast@virtualcoffee.io. You can find the show notes, sign up for our newsletter, check out any of our other resources on our website at virtualcoffee.io. And of course, join us for our virtual coffee chats every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Eastern and Thursday at 12 p.m. Eastern. Please subscribe to our podcast and be sure to leave us a review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.